Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. When we're looking for the kind of intelligence that really makes a difference in that war for the free world, we usually start with my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights. He is, after all, a career intelligence professional with some 20 years of service at the Central Intelligence Agency, time as the Chief of Staff to Ambassador John Bolton in the State Department, and as a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee under then-Chairman Pete Hoekstra. Fred Flights is, of course, the author of a terrifically important book, Obama Bomb, The Great and Growing National Security Fraud. He is an active contributor to our public policy debate on so many different platforms and channels, and it's always a delight to have him on ours. Fred, welcome back.
Hey, Frank. Good to be here.
So, Fred, I want to start with a country that you've been tracking very closely, both in the intelligence community as well as currently with us, and that is North Korea. Of course, it has been improving inexorably its capacity to attack the United States, something it has for decades claimed it wanted to do, to destroy us. Has the moment arrived, in your professional judgment, Fred Flights, that they're able to do that?
Well, I don't know whether North Korea can strike the United States right now with a nuclear-tipped missile. My guess is they are not quite there, but they made a major advance on the 28th of November when they tested a Hwasong-15 ICBM, which was fired 2,800 miles into space. That would give it a range of about 8,000 miles fired on a normal trajectory, putting Washington, D.C. and the entire United States within its range. Now, there's some questions about its accuracy, but it had a lot of advanced features, a very large nose cone, a very advanced steering system. It is a major, major threat, a major technological development.
The question occurs, of course, Fred, the speed with which these missiles are being rolled out and fired, and the improvements, as you say, in some of them, suggests that an impoverished, backwards country is unlikely to be doing all of this by itself. Where do you think the help that is making the threat that is, if it's not here today, it is imminent to this country possible in North Korea at the moment?
There was a huge surge in its nuclear missile technology, especially in 2016. I think there are credible reports that North Korea is getting at least missile and probably nuclear assistance from China. And there are some very credible reports that advanced rocket designs have been reaching North Korea, either from Ukraine or from Russia, or they may be Russian agents stealing them from missile factories in Ukraine. This has to be part of the discussion here, not just sanctions on North Korea, but how Russia and China are assisting North Korea's WMD programs.
Yeah, but it really seems to me, frankly, that we ought to be clearly holding the Chinese especially to account here. We have evidence, as you know, Fred Flights, of so-called transporter erector launchers being supplied by the Chinese to the North Koreans. Some accounts suggest that the missile canisters that go on those so-called TELs are also Chinese made, and what goes in those canisters now being fired by the North Koreans may as well be from China. In fact, I would argue that the threat from North Korea today is made in China. If that is the case, Fred, is the Trump administration doing all that it needs to hold China accountable for enabling this threat to continue to metastasize?
Well, I haven't heard this issue raised in our pressure on China, but I think it's a complex situation because there's certainly evidence that China is aiding the missile program. On the other hand, the Chinese have become worried about the progress of the nuclear program because of the possibility of radiation leaking into China from a nuclear test that has a containment failure. So I think we have to really press China, you know, not only to hold them accountable, but to make the case that accidents in missile and nuclear tests will affect China and that they're just hurting themselves.
Well, I, for one, am at the point now where I think we've got to be going to the Chinese in these private conversations that the president had yesterday with Xi Jinping and saying, look, you've got to get rid of this guy. I think this is likely we'll get another Chinese proxy, but I think this dynasty is demonstrably dangerous, and it is going to be a problem for them if they don't take action here. Fred, one of the things that is breaking as we're speaking is a report out of originally, I believe, the New York Times, that the U.S. Secretary of State, who has been spending a fair amount of time on this North Korea portfolio without appreciable results, as best I can tell, is about to resign from office sometime in the next couple of weeks, evidently. Is that a surprise for one? And what will be his legacy as you see it? And who do you think will likely replace it?
Well, it's not a surprise. I don't think Secretary Tillerson ever figured out a way on how to be a Secretary of State or had a good relationship with the president. And I'm very concerned. He has a massive reform plan of the State Department that still isn't implemented. And I think he's wasted a whole year with process and bureaucracy rather than implementing the president's policies and staffing the State Department. I have heard that CIA Director Mike Pompeo was a leading candidate to become the new Secretary of State. If that's the case, I think he'd be an excellent choice.
I do, too. As to this plan, there's been considerable bellyaching about it from within the Foreign Service ranks, particularly. Numbers of people have been said to be bailing out of the State Department out of frustration. More generally, there's a sense that there is not competent hands on deck at the moment, either in the political appointees or from the career and foreign service sides. You spent time, as I mentioned, working for John Bolton on the senior decks of the State Department, Fred Flights. Do you credit those reports? And if so, what should Trump be doing with a new secretary when he is installed?
Well, I think it's true morale is low, and I think that reflects the fact that there's been poor management under Tillerson. On the other hand, bureaucracies hate streamlining and reorganizations, and I don't believe these reports of massive numbers of state officers leaving. I just don't think it's true. I think there's natural attrition when administrations change, people are reassigned or let go. I think if we went through all that, we find that's what's really going on here. I think we need a new Secretary of State who will basically address the morale problems, staff the building, and just try to find a way to the highest extent possible to find a way to get the state careerists on board and to promote the president's agenda. I think with a good leader and with a good leadership team, that can be accomplished.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, I'm not sure. There does seem to be a lot of resistance to the president's agenda, particularly among the professional staff there. Fred, let me turn quickly to a piece that you recently wrote for Newsmax about the importance of what President Trump is trying to do to improve relations with Russia at a time that's clearly fraught, given all of the charges about his collusion and the provable, demonstrable collusion of the previous administration, and particularly Hillary Clinton, with the Russians. Talk a little bit about your thinking on that subject.
You know, the Obama administration thought they could push Russia around and make it do what we wanted with ultimatums and threats and sanctions. That's not going to work with a nation like this, a nuclear-armed nation like Russia. We have to find a modus vivendi, a way of working with Russia. Russia respects strength. It respects American leadership. And I think by restoring American leadership and trying to find areas on which we can cooperate, we still have to hold them accountable. But some of these sanctions we're placing on Russia, a future president is just going to lift them. They're never going to work. We have to find areas of mutual cooperation, focus on the problem areas, and negotiate with them, and not simply do what John Kerry did. I think every other week he issued an ultimatum. That's why the Russians are negotiating their own solution to Syria with Turkey and Iran, and we're not involved. That began under President Obama. This has to be reversed.
This is a subject we're going to turn to momentarily with Dr. Herbert London of the London Center for Policy Research. Fred Flights, we have to leave it at that with you, though. Thank you very much for kicking us off today, as well as for the great work you do at the Center for Security Policy, as well as your service to our country in your previous capacities. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us next week. Next up, we will speak with Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon about the call of freedom and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.